Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Why do we, as consumers of online services, seem to just roll over and powerlessly accept clicking away all our hard-earned rights against corporate exploitation? Well, there are many factors involved, and we have Professor Nancy Kim from the California Western School of Law with us today to talk about some of these things. Welcome to the Social Network Show, Professor Kim.
Well, it's my pleasure to be back again.
Yeah. And this is Jane Karwoski, your host, and along with Jim Nico, our chief instigator of the Social Network Show and station.
Thank you, and nice to have you back. You're always brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, well, we have spoken to you several times about terms of use of social networks and other online agreements. And we know that they can cause significant harm, diminishing the consumer's privacy rights, taking away other rights they might have, such as the right to sue a company. Why do you think that consumers continue to click agree?
Well, there are a lot of practical considerations, and primarily lack of time. We don't have time to read everything and understand it. And lack of choice. There aren't a lot of options because at this point, almost every website, if not all websites, have terms of use on their, if you want to use any website, you're going to be bound by some term somewhere. So it would take an enormous amount of time to read through all the contracts a consumer faces in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And because the contracts, I'm sorry?
Yes, it certainly would. Some say up to a month of working hours per year.
That's right. So most of us don't want to spend our entire day clicking and actually reading through the terms.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lack of competition over good consumer-friendly terms.
Well, do you think that the fact that many of the contracts seem to contain the same terms makes a difference too?
Yes. I think the lack of competition makes consumers feel like, well, what's the point? Why bother reading when I don't really have a choice?
Mm-hmm. And they certainly can't negotiate the terms. Well, that's not the way it seems like things are supposed to work. Usually when a company has a better product or better customer service, they would attract more consumers than a company that offers a lousy product or bad customer service. Why doesn't that happen with online terms of service?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, that's the standard free market economy argument, right? And we all were brought up believing that the functioning of the market, market economy works because we are all able to make informed decisions. But when it comes to contract terms, we have what economists call a lemons market, in the sense that consumers aren't paying attention to contract terms. They're not reading them, and even if they did read them, they wouldn't know what the terms meant. So in that type of situation, companies really have no incentive to compete for consumer-friendly terms. In fact, it's actually the opposite. Because they get no benefit, because consumers aren't reading and aren't paying attention to them, and if they adopt consumer-friendly terms, they just have all the risk and none of the benefits. So what you end up with is a race to the bottom, with bad contract terms driving out good ones.
Mm.
And I think there's something more going on. It's not just the sort of competition for terms. It's, really the question is, why is it that consumers don't bother to read, other than the fact that they don't have time to read? I mean, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now if consumers... there was some sort of backlash against this proliferation of terms online.
Right, and when there were fewer terms of use and so forth, that would have been a time when people could examine the contracts, but they didn't. So that is something that we want to look into.
Right. So in particular, I think there are some cognitive biases that all of us have, and that affects our contracting behavior.
Well, when you say all of us, you know, that actually includes people with a ton of science education and training. For example, Jerome Groopman, MD, has written a book called How Doctors Think, which helps patients understand the cognitive biases or even errors in thinking that their physicians and specialists are prone to make. And he gives instructions on how to help your physician overcome these biases. So it's something that is in every level of society and education and so forth, these thinking shortcuts, you might say, that get us in trouble. But how do customers' cognitive biases affect their behavior when it comes to making contracts? And what are some of these biases?
Well, it affects their behavior in a number of different ways. In a nutshell, people don't often act the way they think they're going to act. Sometimes they act in a way that if you had asked them before they acted that way, they would consider that action to be irrational. And there's been a lot of research done in this area, that which combines social psychology and economics, and this field is behavioral economics. And Dan Kahneman, who won a Nobel Prize for his research in this area, wrote a best-selling book, Thinking Fast and Slow, that explains many of these decision-making limitations. And that explains a lot of consumer contracting behavior.
Oh, right. Kahneman and Tversky are giants of cognitive psychology. Their landmark prospect theory was about judgment under uncertainty and risk, and is a classic. Unfortunately, Tversky, his partner, died in his partner in publication, died before the awarding of that Nobel Prize, so he couldn't be included, as the Nobel is never offered posthumously. But fast thinking, as you mentioned, thinking, there's fast and slow. Fast thinking is when we think with shortcuts or heuristics, such as using a rule of thumb. What are the principles that most often apply to consumers and contracts?
Well, there's what psychologists refer to as complexity and information overload. And that explains why consumers don't understand or process dense legalese. And the fact that the contracts are so dense deters consumers from reading them. And not only that, it also prevents them from making accurate calculations and predictions about their future behavior. Privacy policies are a good example of complexity and information overload.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, even if you read them, you probably wouldn't understand what they meant or how your personal information would be used.
Okay.
Another type of sort of cognitive bias is myopia. Myopia, it's kind of what it sounds like when people are nearsighted. It's a tendency to overvalue the near term or the present, and to devalue what might happen later. So you focus on what's in front of you and immediate gratification rather than what might happen to you or is likely to happen to you later. And the structure of online contracts tends to exploit this, so that rather than thinking of the problems you might have later on because you clicked and gave up your privacy rights to Facebook or some other social media site, you're thinking of what you want to do right now, which is crowding out your thinking about the future.
Okay.
And what you want to do right now is respond to a post from your friend.
I can see Jim wants to say something about that.
So of course, the cleverness of the race to the bottom. Interestingly enough, the present problem might be perceived as, I got to get rid of this XYZ contract so I can post to my friends. So they help you to solve that problem by you just not reading it.
Right. But right. Simon, and then having the gall to say, I agree, and I have read, and I agree to it.
And one last thing just on this. Does anyone ever get the feeling when they're doing these contracts that somebody's watching to see whether you raise your right hand and swear this is the truth, that I read it, that I read the
He's
contract?
He's saying that as he raises his left hand, by the way.
Well, it's interesting because the companies and consumers, we all know that nobody reads and we click just to get rid of the barrier so that we can get on with our business. But then companies will throw it back in our face
when
we say, wait a second, why are you experimenting on us, for example, like Facebook did? Mm-hmm. And what they come back with is, well, we were allowed to do it because you clicked, you agreed to it under terms of service.
Exactly.
And so it's really your fault, right?
It's my fault.
Who was it that for a few hours one day put something about at the risk of your firstborn or the forfeiture of your firstborn?
Right. That's right.
Which was just a graphic illustration of what we're up against. Well, Professor Kim has even more cases of this sort of consumer bias, which we will take up in our upcoming segment of the Social Network Show.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Back up important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show. This is your host, Dr. J. Jim Nico and I are chatting with Professor Nancy Kim of the California Western School of Law. You've told us, Professor Kim, about how cognitive myopia, information overload, and complexity can trip us up. Are there even more ways of having a bias that will encourage us to go ahead and click agree no matter what?
I think maybe the biggest one is our optimism bias. This is...
that was just a reaction.
Exactly,
go ahead.
Yeah, what it sounds like. And it's the fact that consumers, they may undervalue future costs, things that might happen to us in the future, risks, such as the loss of privacy or the right to sue, because we're optimistic. You've probably heard the statistic that half of marriages end in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But very few people, even those who have heard this statistic, sign a prenup because we're optimistic, right? Entrepreneurs, they know they've heard the statistic about businesses failing, but yet it's not going to happen to them. You ask a group of... students, like I asked a group of students in my first year class if I were to say, how many of you think you're going to be in the top 10%? More than half the class will raise their hand, right? So we're optimistic by nature. And that's a good thing. It's good for the survival of our species. But mm-hmm. in a contracting situation, it's not so good, because that same optimism bias can cause us to click agree to a contract that requires us to give up our right to sue in a court of law and submit to forced arbitration. Because we don't think we're going to need to sue the company. We don't, for example, think that we're going to get hacked because the company that we trusted didn't adopt reasonable cybersecurity measures. Mm-hmm. So we discount the value of the right that we're giving up because we're optimistic.
You know, sometimes I just get overwhelmed by the whole thing, and I feel like, what's the use? You know, just kind of lay down and give up. I think there's a word for that.
Right, there is. That's another term that psychologists have come up with, which is called learned helplessness, where we just give up. I mean, how can we really fight these contracts? They're on every website. They're on every mobile device. There's also a herd mentality at work, where you feel like everybody else is clicking, and, you know, it can't be that bad, right? I mean, if over a billion users have agreed to Facebook terms, how bad can they really be?
Or we're all in it together.
Right.
I have a question.
So, that's kind of a bandwagon effect, too. Come on, join us, right?
Okay, so I have a question here. Okay, so I'm the only person in the world that I know of that would say I love lawyers, and I'm standing by that, but... and I really do. And one of my favorite friends, lawyers, actually a relative, said to me one time, it was actually in a medical context, and I read through this confusing terminology, and I signed it, but I was really uncomfortable, and I mentioned it to him, and he said to me, well, it's not even binding anyway. He knew exactly what I was talking about. The thing I'm wondering is that, okay, we read these agreements, and then it says, if you agree, click here. Well, are they binding? I mean, in other words, Facebook or someone could say, well, you know, you agreed, you clicked, but is a click really a signature? And what if it malfunctions? I mean, do we have any rights in this? In other words, you know, are they binding, these things?
Yes, there have been a number of cases which have said, especially where you are actually clicking on something, like a click to show you accept the terms, that means that you have notice of the terms, and you have what the courts call a duty to read the terms. And so even though we all click and none of us read, we know the terms are there, and we demonstrated that we knew they were there by clicking, because otherwise we couldn't progress on the website. And so the law says, because of that, that triggers your so-called duty to read the terms. And if you didn't, that's your fault.
Okay. So go ahead,
even
Jane.
Though it's contrary to human behavior, you know, the way we know everyone acts, that's the law. That's the direction the law has turned to. So,
wow.
It doesn't take into account these cognitive biases and the way people actually behave.
Or the practical significance, you know, of taking the time to read all of those terms. And to me, that's the test of the reasonable person. You know, I'm just hoping that will, you know, be revised somehow. But to go on, you know, all of these, the cognitive biases that you're talking about that fool us into thinking, or it's our way of thinking, oh, it'll be okay. That's not really the consumer's fault. It is simply the way the human mind works. So don't companies manipulate matters to exploit these cognitive biases to benefit themselves at the expense of the consumer?
Yes, they absolutely do. I mean, we're individual consumers. How we don't have the marketing dollars that they have to sort of experiment and find out exactly, you know, what makes us tick. And it's going to be even worse we're going to be even more out sort of funded, I guess, or out gunned mm-hmm. by these companies that, now that they have all this data on us. The way they design. The data, the use of data to know what really makes us tick. You know,
right.
what are our vulnerabilities? What are our tendencies? They have all this information on us. We don't even know who has the information, so we can't even be wary. We don't even know who to sort of be when to be on alert. And companies design their contracts in a way that exploits our vulnerabilities. And they do this in a number of ways, but there's one sort of very obvious way, and that's they tend to hook you into their service, and then they'll change the terms.
Mm-hmm.
Really a bait and switch going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So you have companies like Facebook that, you know, if you can remember 10 years ago when they first got started, they were known as the privacy-protecting alternative, right?
Yeah, and
that's changed because they've updated and they've changed their terms of use who knows how many times. And each time they have degraded our privacy rights more and more each time. And at this point, their users have sunk costs, right? They've established a network. They're reliant on the service. And it's going to cost them to switch services.
Yeah.
And there's also something called inertia that comes into play, as well as the sunken switching costs. It's just hard to switch. I mean, it's so hard to switch email services, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to move all your contacts over. You have to notify everyone. It's even harder with social media. And it's especially when you're talking about a juggernaut like Facebook, because where else... What other network are you going to use?
LinkedIn.
Yeah. Or me.
Yeah, we
just got to get that one straightened out.
It's like getting the service up and going, getting that network established.
That's true.
So
sure. Yeah. The switching costs, you might say, the transfer costs for to the individual.
And the network effects. Don't forget the fact that, you know, it's a lot easier when users are already on a particular network.
That's right. You're right.
You need the larger pool of users, the better. You mentioned some of these things, the modification at will clause, and a fascinating account of how Facebook changed those things is in a book by Kate Losse, L-O-S-S-E, The Boy Kings. And I want to read that again just to get all those sequences of things, because she started out in what was then customer service. Of course, then they switched from customer to user and more or less eliminated a lot of the service involved.
Can I just ask a quick question? Okay. In light of this, in the shortest possible way to answer, if you can, is there any hope? Is there any hope that we can actually get some rights in this? And we only have a few minutes. But...
That was my question.
Oh, is that it?
Too.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It's really getting depressing.
Okay, so there are a number of things that I'm hoping for, but there is hope.
You're optimistic.
At least in California.
She's optimistic.
I don't want to leave you with a feeling of even more helplessness in the face of terms. So remember when we talked about non-disparagement clauses?
Mm-hmm.
Those were the clauses in contracts that prohibited consumers from criticizing a business on social media.
Yes.
Or on a consumer review site.
Yes.
Well, last fall, several months ago, Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that protects the ability of consumers to post reviews online. And so there is, you know, we should sort of resist the feeling of learned helplessness and, you know, lobbies, because sometimes we can get some changes, the changes we want to contract terms. I mean, it might require legislation, but there is hope, and I think that we should keep trying to resist just clicking accept and not complaining about it.
Well, I've got an optimism bias going on this right now. I think everything's going to turn around in our favor.
Well, there's one. I hate to rain on your parade here, but there's one particular issue I think that might impede these sort of mobilization efforts, and that's mandatory arbitration clauses.
Oh, boy.
These are clauses that are in a lot of online contracts that say that if you have a dispute with a company, rather than suing us, you have to take us to arbitration.
Right.
The problem with that is arbitration is a closed box, in that the proceedings are not public, are not a matter of public record. So if something really egregious happens, you don't know how the arbitrator decides, and often you're not even able to talk about what that egregious term was. So it's kind of hard to mobilize consumer outrage when you can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that part. Gotcha.
A clever built-in protection against that sort of thing that the companies have instituted as well. Well, we are out of time, so I have more things I want to ask you about, so we'll look forward to talking with you again, Professor Kim. Thank you so much.
It was great to talk to you again.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We hope that you will be safe and have fun online and off until we meet you here again on the Social Network Show. Whether you access us via our website or podcastone.com or iTunes. Thank you, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.